Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Welcome back to part two of our Octopussy 40th anniversary celebrations. And we start with Chris Eales, Jonathan Payne and Richard Dobbs Grove.
Now, if I can start with you, John, what is it makes this your favourite James Bond film?
Oh, my favourite James Bond. That's. Do you know what, though? When I was about 10, this probably was my favourite Bond film of the time. There's just so much to love for a 10-year-old, I think, in this movie. From beginning to end, honestly. So, as I said, it was probably my favourite when I was growing up. I watched them all with my dad. He was pretty obsessed with them. Yeah, this one was just a real fave for loads of reasons. From the women, to the camp, to oh my God, that opening. I mean, the opening is both absolutely hilarious and ridiculous. But knows it 100%, which, you know, I feel like you could really judge the rest of the film like that, to be honest, you know, equal measures. It's certainly still up there. There's still bits I absolutely 100% love.
I jumped on you with that as your favourite James Bond film, and it's possibly not. Rich, where does this film land for you?
It's pretty high up there. I think, like John said, there's so many recognisable kind of Bond key themes, almost all in this opening sequence, actually, you know, from the action-packed opener to the disguises, gadgets, explosions, kind of got it all. And I remember kind of not really remembering this as sitting down and watching this film, but bits from it at moments. So hot air balloons, clowns, kind of key little scenes that I'm like, oh, it's in this one. And it wasn't until really like lockdown recently where I watched all the Bonds in order from start to finish, like really paid attention. Ah, okay, all the things that I sort of remember from the Rog era were pretty much in this one. So it was kind of, this is the one where this happens and this happens. Like John said, it's kind of got it all.
If we dive straight into it, the pre-title sequence.
Let's get into it.
Well, first of all, Rog and his flares. Can we talk about that for a moment?
You want to go for the gun barrel?
I mean, that moment of him strutting across the screen, you're like, this is cool. There's wide trousers.
Just to be a complete geek, I think that is the same gun barrel that they've used for multiple films that may have come from The Spy Who Loved Me, which is proper late 70s big flares. Okay. And they just never shot another one.
But if it works, it works, you know.
Yeah.
It looks great doing it. Keep it.
Definitely. Hence that outfit. The pre-title sequence. Oh, so
Cuba via Elstree, via America, you know, a bit of both.
Who knows where?
Let's put
out a few palm trees and someone vaguely looking like Fidel Castro. I'm assuming it's Fidel Castro.
I'm assuming that's what the gag is as well. And yeah, it's fun. I'm not entirely sure what he's there to do. I don't really care. He's there to blow something up that's booping and beeping. Great. Love it. But yeah, the stunt double coming in as, you're El Toro too. Great. Great stuff.
Well, it's a small world. You're a Toro too.
Love it. The really fake mustache. Hilarious. Fooling, hardly Mission Impossible mask reveal, but you know, we'll go with it. It's fine.
They were on a budget. It was the 80s.
Absolutely.
Just in those first few moments, you get Bond in his sort of horse racing outfit, weekend wear, into a military change, infiltrating this base, kind of not getting rid of the person you're meant to be impersonating beforehand. So he's like,
oh yeah,
his buddy comes out of a room. It's like, they just had a meeting with Toro, and he's like, he was just back in that room and he's here. Like, it just seems like, yeah, they didn't get rid of the person that they're impersonating. But yeah, straight away, costume changes, gadgets, bombs.
And good beeping gadgets. There's a healthy amount of 80s
booping and beeping
tech with big buttons and big lights.
Absolutely. Big buttons, big light. I don't need to know what it does. It doesn't matter. It's, you know, he's there to blow it up. Who cares?
It's just catching up with Bond, though. He's on a mission. You don't really need to know what it's about, but he's out. He's doing his spy stuff. You're coming in on something already underway. And you're like, and you're in.
And then gets caught.
And then gets caught. And he's being taken on a big truck and he needs to get out of a jam.
Yeah. So along comes our friend in the convertible Range Rover, showing a bit of leg. I don't want to know how old she is.
And Roger's a bit like, eh, yeah, take a look at this. Take a look at this.
To his guards, which...
But it's a good stunt.
Not look like, they don't look very Cuban. I must say, one of them looked like Eddie Marsden. You know, it was literally bloke down the pub. He was given a nod and a wink to. But yeah, great way of getting out of it. Classic Bond.
Yeah, pull the parachutes and they're away.
You know, so jauntily going past the driver. He's in the other car. He's like, oh, hey. And then guns down and the wheels.
And then we get the horse's ass.
Yeah, with comedy sound effects.
I mean, what was going to come out of that? You would never guess.
This is the thing. I don't remember the first time I saw it and the surprise, but just that thing of there is a mini jet in that little horse box and then just flying away and seeing Rog sort of cramped up inside of it. That feeling of, oh my God, what's going to happen? And then whoosh, and he's away.
But it still looks really cool. The fact they got a little jet, I believe, right?
Oh yeah, that thing exists. It's real.
America. It's really, really great. And they shoot it with a homing rocket. Yeah, you know, there's some dodgy backstreet projection whilst he's in the cockpit of the homing rocket behind him. Yeah.
He flies about 50 miles away, but then he's back at the base.
And when he's at the base, that explosion when the hangar blows up is one of the best that I've ever seen, I think.
Oh, it's so good. It's so good. Yeah, the plane going in, and obviously, you know, you can see the little rod of the plane moving through it as it goes through it. But, oh my, I remember when I was young watching this for the first time, I thought it was absolutely mind-blowing, stunning, really good.
Yeah. And it's of that time where they filmed the explosion, but then like slightly different angle, slightly before the explosion. So you kind of get the boom, boom, boom. Several different versions of the explosion just to really get their money's worth. And you want to see that scale and scope of what they, you know, were destroying. Looks great.
It's terrific. And then does he fly to America, or is it still in Cuba that he runs out of fuel? Because why would he take off in this jet that's practically out of gas?
I know. I guess he flew to America and then ran out of gas, yeah. I guess.
It's a lead-in for a funny line into the opening titles.
Which I read, I don't know how true this is, but I read that they'd initially cut the funny line and then initial test audiences reacted really well to it, or it was in the trailer or something. And then, yeah, he decided to keep it. But I don't know. If he didn't have it, it would feel a really odd place to end it, I guess. Or maybe you just end it with the explosion and him zooming off.
But it needs a comedy Roger classic.
Otherwise, it wouldn't be a Roger era opening, would it, really? So
yeah. And then that opening with that line just has then everything you expect from Roger. You know exactly what you're going to get from it. You get the comedy, you've got the action, the spy stuff. It's like, right, this is, you know, the journey that you're signing up for. And it kind of all delivers, I think, in that opening.
Fill her up, please.
So, overall, is it a hit? Is it a miss? Is it a... where does it rank, I guess, in the Bond films?
You go first, Chris. Where does it rank for you?
I mean, for me, it is way up there. I've made it quite clear in the past that this is one of my top three Bond films. There's that sorter app where you can fill in, do I like this film? Do I like that film? Do I like this one? Do I like that one? And then at the end, it tells you, all right, because of your selections, this is your top films. And I've done it twice over the course of a couple of years. And each time Octopussy has ended up in either number one or number two spot. It's terrific. I think it's great. It delivers the action, the laughs. There's certainly more than enough plot, maybe too much plot to go through. Yeah, it's absolutely great. Absolutely great. I know it has some difficult points. There are many a cultural issue to go with it. But yeah, it's terrific.
Yeah, I think I agree on the whole. As I said, this was a childhood favourite. And while it's probably not my absolute favourite, it's certainly my favourite of the Rog era, I think, still. Yes, it has some very problematic moments. Outside of those moments, I think it has some of the best Bond elements. You know, some great actors chewing scenery. It has some women with some great agency for the time, especially. Octopussy's great as a character. I really enjoy her. And yeah, I really enjoy the villains. I think the plot for the villain, yeah, it is a bit convoluted. But I enjoy each element of the plot in isolation as well, I think. It's a bit long, won't lie. But yeah, on the whole, there's a lot to love. And yeah, the practical stunt work is just, it's just great. It's just phenomenal. Some of the best I've seen in a long time and really holds up to the extent of, you know, that obviously some of the other elements don't. It's still up there for me, for sure.
Yeah, likewise. I mean, for me, it's one of my favorite Roger Moore Bonds, definitely. As I said at the beginning, it's got everything in that opening 20 minutes for what you can expect from a good spy thriller. You know, gadgets, explosions, costume changes. We're in East Berlin. There's lots going on. But I also like this one, although it is quite long, does have those quieter moments, those quieter story moments where you get a bit of the backstory of Octopussy, and you have a moment where Kamal Khan is sort of introducing himself, and like you say, every word coming out of his mouth has danger attached to it. So these characters don't feel throwaway. They feel fully embodied by this cast. You've got some slightly amper, over-the-top characters in the Russians, but again, they're still, you totally believe those characters. I think the first 20 minutes, I could just watch that and feel like I've seen a good moment of Bond. But by that point, you're in and you're up the races. You know, you'll start it, but you'll definitely finish it. Yes, definitely some problematic moments, which were from a different time, which you can't ignore. But it's full of action. And that literally ticking clock all the way to the end, I think, makes this one of the best.
Great. So I think unanimously a hit.
Thumbs up, definitely.
Thumbs up all round. Excellent.
Definitely.
Next up, sharing his love for Octopussy was Nikolai Quack.
Octopussy. Octopussy. Greetings to the Really 007 guys. I love you. It's incredible. I love Octopussy. For so many reasons, honestly. It's like, it's Roger Moore at the height of his confidence in terms of his performance as Bond. I would argue that Octopussy may be his most confident performance. I mean, that scene where he interrogates General Orlov is so incredible. And the way he just straight up shoots East German soldier in the head right afterwards, it's actually really brutal. And that's something that gets lost in translation with Octopussy, with some fans, I feel. For so many decades, you know, movie reviewers and critics and even a large amount of fans have just been like, oh, it's the one with the clown. It's the silly one. It's got like the Tarzan yell. And it does have all of that. Although I will defend the clown scene until I die. It's a very suspenseful, really dramatic scene where Bond is at a disadvantage because he's got on a silly costume, which makes the scene more suspenseful because no one's believing him that there's a bomb in there. And that's one of the best elements of Octopussy, is that the entire Cold War plot of this exiled Afghan prince, Kamal Khan, who's a super underrated villain as well. He's got so many great lines, Mr. Bond is indeed a very rare breed, soon to be made extinct. The way he pronounces octopussy, he takes such pleasure in it. It's just fucking brilliant. Octopussy has got a great pair of villains, because next to Kamal Khan and his sort of suave, delightfully slimy swagger, we've got General Orlov, who is just so insane. I love him so much. Steven Berkoff is amazing. As General Orlov, he really fights against the timid, outdated, and unrealistic Cold War politics that General Gogol stands for. He's the exact opposite in every way. And I absolutely adore him for that. Not to mention Vijay, one of our favorite allies. I know he's one of your guys' favorite. He's fantastic. So likable. Such a sad death scene. The one and only appearance of Miss Penelope Smallbone, which is almost kind of sad to a degree that they never ended up doing anything more with that actress. But of course, Moneypenny is still the OG MI6 secretary. Aside from all of that, you've got a fantastic score. All-time high is an underrated song, I would say. And also, it's just so gorgeous in its instrumental version, really. I mean, it's... I could listen to that forever. So romantic sounding. And then, of course, we've got John Glenn at the helm as the director. And no one does stunts and action in terms of how it's edited, how it's filmed, like John Glenn. Maybe the most underrated action director of the 1980s. What he does in Octopussy in terms of the tuk-tuk chase, the opening with the Acrostar plane sequence, which is amazing. Such a good Bond opening sequence. And one of the very few Bond pre-title sequences that have absolutely nothing to do with the rest of the plot. It's amazingly filmed and edited and put together. The stunt work is crazy. I love the final battle at the Monsoon Palace. It's amazing to see all of these gymnastic performers fighting with Kamal Khan's men. And the chase scene, the chase scene where Bond races after the airplane with the horse, and he gets on the airplane. Tom Cruise, eat your heart out, honestly. I mean, this was done in 1983, and it was done with stunt performers, this was done with professionals. Look, I love Tom Cruise doing his own stunts, but let's be honest, it does take a little bit something away from professional stunt performers in a way, and nobody was able to highlight the stuntman in the action scenes better than John Glenn in the 80s Bond films. So, love Octopussy. It's a fantastic movie. It's got brilliant locations, great action, fantastic score. Roger Moore at his height as James Bond. It's got a fantastic pair of main villains and fantastic henchmen. Gobinda is awesome. Buzzsaw Yo-Yo Guy, fantastic, so memorable, despite him never even uttering a word. The twins, the circus twins, the knife-throwing twins, fantastic. The opening with 00, was it 008 or 009, who dies in the clown costume in the beginning. Anyway, brilliant, incredibly creepy and scary whenever I was watching it as like a preteen sort of teenager. Amazing opening, so much mystery. I love it. It's a genius Cold War spy thriller with some real random silliness that you can enjoy and that you can maybe cringe to at some points, but that never overtakes the movie at all. It's a fun ride all the way through, and I love it.
These planes we use, the BD jets, they were built for a previous, well, when Moonraker was supposed to have been made, many films before that, there was supposed to be a big aerial sequence and what have you, and Peter Lamont had built these three mock-ups of the BD jet, so they were actually there in storage at Pinewood. So he said to me, I've got these planes, he said, I built at great expense. He said, can't you use them for something? And that's when I wrote that sequence for the, mainly for financial reasons. We had these three Beady jets. So we got the chap over from the States that flew the what used to do circus stuff with this plane. And he showed me a commercial that he'd shot for a Japanese tobacco company, I think it was. And it showed him flying the Speedy Jet through an empty hangar, and it was gone in a flash. You know, you can imagine he's doing 300 miles an hour, and he goes through this hangar so fast. You are, what was it? Did I see that or didn't I? Sort of thing. It was so bad, undramatic, that that they matted, very badly matted, some doors closing. As the thing came in, you know, so it was trying to make out it was a near escape. And that's what gave me the idea to use the doors closing in the scene we shot for Octopussy. So it's strange how these things evolve when you're working things out. And it was one of the best pre-title scenes. Oh, certainly the most exciting.
Yeah, you gave us a glut of riches with the pre-title sequences, though, John. There's some amazing ones.
Yeah, they were fun, and sometimes they, like Octopussy, had nothing to do with the film at all. I mean, yeah. Ideal, it like a second feature. You know, they used to have second features years ago.
Yeah,
you were too young, but instead of a second feature, we'd do our own second feature and call it a pre-title sequence.
I always used to feel like it was the final scene of the previous mission. You know, the mission is just finishing off before the mission of the movie.
Yeah, it could have been. Yeah, that would have been a good idea. Yeah. The most dangerous thing about it was John Richardson, the special effects man, was driving an old Jag that we bought, and we cut the top of it off and we put a pole arm in the middle. And John was driving this Jag, this old Jag, and through the hangar, and we covered the car and the pole arm with lots of people running about in the foreground, you see. So you disguise that. And for, you know, briefly, 2 or 3 seconds at the most. And then the most dangerous thing was when he drove out of the hangar, the linkage to the accelerator broke and it suddenly went flat out. And he was now driving this contraption with an aeroplane on the top. Driving it around with parked aircraft that belonged to the RAF and narrowly missing them. That was quite a happy moment.
I didn't take off.
Even just then, I was watching it very much with his words in my mind about how the plane was carried on. I think it was an old Mercedes. And you really have to stare to see it, even when you know there's a pole holding the plane. It's so brilliantly directed. Scene. It's fantastic. And the model work as well with the explosion. I was staring at it thinking, how can that be a model? Because everything around it looks so real and big and to scale.
Yeah, it's stunning.
Incredible.
I just wanted to say to Really 007 podcast, my name's John Richardson. I've done a few effects in my life. Listen to the podcast and enjoy it. There were a couple of the Bond films that, you know, I'm most proud of. One was Octopussy. We did fold around miniatures where we would put miniature sets in front of the real set and use the reality of the background in conjunction with the model. And people could never see the joins. They never realized that when the plane flies into the hangar on Octopussy, it was a model plane flying behind a model door. But it was in front of a real hangar with real actors and stuntmen and people. The plane going through the hangar.
I think it's certainly one of the greatest Bond pre-title sequences, isn't it? And that stunt is just, the effects. To hear the stories about it is amazing.
I mean, yeah, we'd love to hear it because it's just so much imagination. I mean, it's our childhood. It's our childhood, this. There's no, like, CGI tricks. This is happening. And it brings you so much more into the action because it's so realistic.
One thing that we worked out very quickly was the speed that Corky's plane would be flying and the length of the hangar. It would be in and out in less than a second. Well, that's not very exciting screen time. I came up with this wild idea that we'd get an old Jaguar car, cut the roof off, weld a pole arm into the chassis in the middle, put a gimbal on the top of it with a full-size BD jet on it that could bank and move, and then paint the car and the pole camouflage colours, and I'd drive it through the hangar at 75 miles an hour, which gave us much longer screen time. You got actors and stuntmen running backwards and forwards, carefully positioned cameras so you didn't see the me in the Jaguar. And I drove through it, I say 75 miles an hour. I did it about 5 or 6 times. And the stuntmen would be closing the doors at the far end up to a predetermined spot.
Yeah.
So that as the plane banked, it just squeezed through the gap. Well, the gap, I think, gave me about 4 inches either side of the Jaguar. At that speed, it was an interesting ride.
bit hairy.
The last take, in fact, I got out through the doors at the far end, and the throttle had jammed open on the car. And it took me a second to realise why I couldn't slow the wretched thing down. And I ended up, of course, turning off the ignition. That, in turn, turned off the power steering. There's one of Her Majesty's planes parked on the far side of the grass, and I took to the grass heading towards it, ended up spinning the car to try and slow it down. But, you know, they're all sort of fun things and moments that you get doing a Bond. And, you know, it's every schoolboy's dream to get to play with the toys that we got to play with.
Everything you see is real, isn't it? You know, it's not like, okay, the close-ups of Roger are great, but everything else, the non-close-ups, are all people hanging on a plane, hanging off the side of a train. I don't know. Even the circus stuff. Oh, that's real, isn't it?
Yep, you
know, knife throwing.
It's a credit to John Glenn and that generation of filmmaker to look at the words on the page.
Yeah.
And when going to do location recce and stuff of that nature and say, right, this is what I want. Right. I'd like this for somebody to then go and say, right, get me some shots, get me some footage. Let me have a look at the idea and all that idea of putting money on the screen. Well, it's there. You're just in the opening sequence alone. You can see where the money's been spent. It's magnificent.
There can't have been any debate when the trailers came out for like Octopussy. If you just saw some guy on a train running on top of a train, guy on hanging off a plane, how can you? I mean, everyone must have been like, this is, I can't wait to see this.
The I remember the news footage is from the time, news clips from the time, or trailer bits and pieces from the time, and those sequences were always in there. We'd seen train stuff before, you know, never like that. You'd never seen that before on a train thing. We'd seen plane things before, not quite like that. That was just lunacy. We'd never seen that at all, you know. The whole idea that that could be pulled off for real was just remarkable.
I don't think people talk about the stunts in this very much. Certainly not enough, because there's some amazing things in this set pieces in this film. You know, you've got the incredible opening, the tuk-tuk chase in India, which real. Again, it feels real. They're there. You can see, you know, they look like, you know, it's as though they just rocked up to, you know, to that street on that day, and they had a few actors in tuk-tuks, and then they filmed what happened. You know what I mean? It's not, I don't know how on earth you control that.
Let me just chip in briefly because they're on the tuk-tuks now.
Oh, right.
My live view of it. You carry on. I'm enjoying your description.
But it just feels so, so real.
Well, the tennis references your idea in that action scene, in the chase.
Oh, it was my idea. We had to use it. I had to use it as a gag. I mean, anyone who's in.
We love it.
So he Yeah, during the chase in Udaipur, he was swatting them off with his tennis racket. All the film.
And when the crowd looked from side to side, you know, like that.
Yeah.
Very good. John.
We used to try and, you know, obviously, humour was a very important part of my films. Yeah. Some people would say there was too much humour.
That was. Yeah.
Brilliant.
Then the train, as we've been talking about, and the amazing shot, I think, John, you were talking about it before, where, you know, a film these days would be heralded for this, where Bond's running on top of the train and Gobinda's running below it, and you can see them both at the same time. Mm. It's absolutely brilliant, and, you know, death-defying stunts on the train, and then we have the big, you know, action set piece at the end back in India, and you've got someone riding a horse onto a plane and then hanging off a plane. It's just absolutely astonishing. I don't think it gets anywhere near enough praise for the quality and the, you know, the tension that those stunts and the urgency and the, you know, the immediacy of the danger that doing those stunts for real brings.
I've had the good fortune to know Rocky Taylor for some years, and he doubled Roger in India on Octopussy. When he said he got a phone call from Bob Simmons, who said, you know, why don't you come and work on the Bond? And he said, okay, well, what are we doing this time, Bob? And Bob says, balls to the walls, Rob. And they absolutely threw the kitchen sink at it, if you compare it with For Your Eyes Only.
John Orty from Behind the Stunts interviewed Paul Weston on the stage at the Prince Charles Cinema about his work on Octopussy.
One time we'd done all the stuff on Octopussy, running over the top of the train, diving over pipes, under bridges. And we sort of got him into the studios and got him on top of the train, and we did all the close-ups and whatever. And then there was one time they brought the whole train, I mean, a big coach, from Peterborough into the studios so that he could climb up and get on top. And he sat there in his deck chair, and John Glenn said to him, okay, Paul will show you what you've got to do. I was dressed like him anyway, I was doubling him. So he said, okay. And so I climbed up and got onto the top of the train. And Roger said, John, do you want me to look down at the camera? He said, no, just climb straight up. He said, well, Paul can do that. And I did it in the studio.
The bit where Bond is driving on the train track.
Yeah.
Well, we had a car on the train track, which I could show Roger how to drive. Not that there was much involved in driving, but I found the first time you did it and you're coming up to a set of points, you desperately wanted to turn the steering wheel. And of course, that's the last thing you needed to do. But Roger was great. I mean, he sat in it and drove it, and he was quite happy with it. We had a lot of fun with that.
And obviously, when the the train coming from the other way, hits the car, and it goes and nearly kills those two people for real in that boat. It's just unbelievable.
And the car chase with the Alpha, you know, you get a great car chase with the police cars, but it's still driven by plot. It's like, you know, Bond's kicked off the train. He's got to get back. Got to get to the the air base in time. It's just a ticking clock. It's just is a fantastic film.
It's a lesson in filmmaking. It 2 hours 10 minutes.
Mm.
How on earth does he get all this in? And have loads of action as well.
You mentioned that some of the stunts get forgotten, and actually it strikes me, I think Octopussy is the Roger Moore film that just gets overlooked generally. They've all, Live and Let Die, that's his first one. The Man with the Golden Gun is the one that everyone says is rubbish. They're wrong. They say it's rubbish.
Then it's iconic, though.
Yeah, you've got The Spy Who Loved Me, which is seen as the definitive Roger Moore on film, and a film that shaped Bond for many years to come. You've got Moonraker, which everyone says is the silly one.
Mm.
You've got For Your Eyes Only. That's the serious one. You've got Octopussy. I don't know what that one is, because then you've got A View to Kill, where he's too old in it. They've all got their place, but Octopussy doesn't really have
a
place. And yet it's actually, surely, one of the best Bond films.
Mm. Is it the title of it, maybe? I don't know.
Maybe because it came out against Never Say Never Again, but I can't think after all these years that would have an effect, and it did pretty good box office. I don't know, but I feel like had it been Roger's last, as you know, at one time it looked like it might be, I think it would probably be remembered more because it's Roger's last.
Yeah,
because he then did another. It just feels like for the reasons I gave, they've all got their standout thing in fandom of what they are as a Bond film. As Octopussy doesn't really have a thing, does it?
Yeah,
well, everything. That's what
it's got. Everything. Yeah.
Hey, my name's Owen. I live here in the UK. I'm 38 years of age. Born in 84, 1 year after Octopussy was released. But I'm living proof that it doesn't really matter if you weren't around when the movie was released or if you're a bit younger than the movie itself. It's still as relevant today as it ever was. The movie's great. The balance was struck between the plot being pretty strong and not too unrealistic or silly like Moonraker, and entertainment value was fantastic. So you had Vijay, the old tennis player, in there doing a cameo. You had some great actors. So the villain was fantastic. Kamal Khan, Louis Jourdan, or the lead Bond girl, Maud Adams, fantastic. She was really strong in it, but also gorgeous, same as Christina Weyborn. Sort of crushes on those girls to this day. And Roger Moore, of course, let's not forget Bond himself. He played this one really well. One of his strongest, for me. Maybe not as his strongest Bond, maybe that was Live and Let Die, but yeah, I love this. And everything about it was great. The soundtrack, also by John Barry, I guess without saying, I mean, all of his scores were fantastic, but the one for Octopussy, for every scene, seemed so powerful, so relevant, like the way that struck a chord, literally, with what was going on and the way that the music was presented. Octopussy is one of those movies that I always kind of go back and pick out the box set in favour of some of the others. So yeah, it's one that I'll also be introducing to my kids in due course. They're only 4 years old and eight months old at the moment, so in due course. But just as I was brought up with Bond with my family and watched into my teens and adulthood, I'm sure they will too, and keep the Bond theme alive, really, and keep fanhood going and live and active. But Octopussy is definitely one you should watch if you haven't seen it already. So go out there and watch it, stream it, buy it on Blu-ray and DVD, which is what I do to miss the commercials. But yeah, love it. And cheers for your post, guys. I love your content. See ya.
We'll move on to like Octopussy and Magda, I think, who are introduced quite differently. Magda is introduced as the sort of, I don't think you ever think she's going to be the main Bond girl, but she's got a lot of screen time in that first 45 minutes or so. She has a meal, of course, with Bond. She have the, you know, the bedroom scene.
Good morning.
Morning. I didn't want to wake you, but since you're up, we can say a proper goodbye.
This is the time.
Beautiful view, isn't it? I don't know how to say goodbye.
Actions speak louder than words.
You're so right.
One of the greatest things I've ever seen in my life, the how she flows out of the window. I think that's if that was like one of the heralded directors of our time, I mean, it's just the shots of that. And of course, the fact is brilliant, isn't it, that she leaves the bedroom window in Pinewood and lands in India. Yeah, it's great, isn't it? You'd think from that performance, well, from both of them, these would be two really big actresses, I think. Because I think the genuinely good acting, and Magda is, I don't know, sometimes she's never sort of seen as the Stacey Sutton or the BB or a silly kind of Bond girl, but I've never really heard anyone say, I really liked her character. She was quite intriguing. I don't know.
Again, like the film, she's kind of got everything, so she just gets forgotten.
Yeah.
She was the gangster's mole, really, in that respect of, you know, those opening moments. She's always with Kamal Khan. Mm. You know, she comes in to the auction. Bond goes over and sees her and blah, 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 and then off to India. And her job is to get the egg back. And, you know, so she's there as a tool being operated by Kamal for the purpose of the plot. Evidently, looking at the script, presumably they thought, there's no real female input here for quite some time. We need to have an additional figure, which is why Octopussy doesn't arrive till much later on in the story. To charge the dinner to room, whatever it was, and, you know, I knew the price of eggs was going up, but I thought, isn't that a bit steep? But it's a nice little setup.
Yeah.
But the she is an additional character brought in maybe to just carry the whole thing forward until Octopussy turns up. But she's always remembered for that role. I mean, she's done a whole bunch of other bits and pieces, lots of television work and some other bits, but she's always remembered for that.
Yeah.
And Maud was very busy leading up to that as well. Rollerball, she was in that, wasn't she? And a couple of other fairly big noted pictures. And of course she'd done Man with a Golden Gun before. So it's always struck me as very odd. Millions of actresses the world over.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
She's the same one.
Said this the other night, didn't you, Chris?
Well, it works, doesn't it?
A different character, yeah.
Really. Yeah. Oh, she's so good. Yeah, just on Magda, she's quite strange, really, because, like you say, she's in it a lot to start with, and it seems like she is Kamal's, I don't know, kept woman, but then from about halfway through, she's sort of Octopus's right hand woman,
she's not jealous, is she?
And no, she's not. And you know, there is quite a bit of romance in their scenes, Bond and Magda scenes.
Yeah.
And you know, in other films, there is that with, you know, with Roger's Bond. You know, if you think back to Miss Anders, she dies. Moonraker, Liesl. There's Corinne, she dies. Oh. Yeah, and then Liesl in the previous one, she dies. And there is, you know, the previous. Not the main Bond girl, but the sort of secondary Bond girl who usually, you know, dies, and that's why they're not in it. But not with Magda. Yeah, so it is quite unusual, and she is in it quite a bit. But again, she just seems to be forgotten a bit.
Has she got maybe nearly as much screen time as Octopussy?
Yeah, maybe. Yeah,
possibly.
But the one that I had a massive crush on was Christina Weyborn.
Oh yeah.
And Christina was beautiful, and you know, but and standing near her it was just get a photo done and just being around, having a quick chat and whatever. It was lovely. I mean, I'll talk a little bit about the 43 reunion.
Yeah, but, so you were there.
The highlight for me, I mean, has been meeting Christina again and telling her I had a crush on her. And she and I just literally hit it off. A couple of the Bond girls there, so there was Safira there, there was Helene, there was Alison there, so they were there. But of course, for me, it was Christina. So Christina and I literally hit it off. And she did, I don't say this lightly, but when she left, she said, this was the best. And she goes, you know what? I really enjoyed it because we just got on and you made this so much fun.
Maud Adams is a funny one for me because when I was a youngster watching these films, in the looks stage, which I know, but in the looks stakes, she didn't do anything for me. And then I think I hit 40 and all of a sudden he was like, wow, Maud Adams. And,
Tom, you've
just reached the magic 40 milestone.
Yeah,
so you should. I'm expecting you to next time you set eyes on her to be like, "Whoa, I didn't realise that."
Well, our dad, it was always. I remember we asked him, "What's your favourite Bond film, Dad?" And I remember once he said, "It could be Octopussy," and Mum just went, "Oh, it's just because you fancy Maud Adams. That's why."
There you go.
And it was like, well, no, I like the Indian setting, and I like, you know, the sort of.
But turning, yeah.
Yeah, she. It's ridiculous to say she's mature because she's only in her 30s, isn't she? I think in the film, it's not. It's not.
Like, but it seems an age appropriate.
It does, yeah.
For her character is mature and not. Yeah. You know, I don't know. You know, she has a lot of agency and everything, so it works really well. And you can. It's quite funny because when they've only just sort of met properly, but when
Kamal comes in.
Yeah.
Her and Bond are sort of stood next to each other having a drink, and they look like a couple.
Bond has escaped.
How careless of you.
I apologize.
Oh, by the way, Kamal, I'd like you to meet my new house guest.
An old friend of the family, you might say. How lovely. You have a nasty habit of surviving. Well, you know what they say about the fittest? Octopussy, I would enjoy another opportunity to take care of Mr. Bond personally.
I will take care of Mr. Bond myself.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Good night. And enjoy yourselves.
You know, they've got that, you know, that tremendous chemistry and everything. Mm. Yeah, it really works.
She never needs Bond, does she? You know, I know she, some might say forces himself on her, but she's in control of that. She is. And I do think she's one of the stronger characters for that. And it's a fairly pro-women film, you could say, isn't it? Mm. You know, like the Magda doesn't die. Octopussy is a very, very powerful woman who's really in control of Kamal Khan, and she confronts him at the end. Yes, okay, she gets captured, but you know, there is Govinda and him there. You know,
Octopussy's agents, female agents, or whatever you want to call them, they overpower Kamal's palace and everything. They take over before Octopussy does get taken, but they've secured the building, not Bond. Bond sort of does a bit, but he's only going after her.
Yeah, which shows this film was quite pro, quite modern thinking, really, or quite ahead of its time. It
wasn't ageist.
No, it wasn't ageist, but also strong female characters. This film's full of strong female characters.
I've just had to pull over because I've been asked to give some thoughts on Octopussy on its 40th anniversary. This one is just like, I can't eulogise enough, and I couldn't wait to pull over and get this sorted and have a chat about this, because so context: Octopussy 1983, Rob Parker 1983, so we're both of the same precise vintage, and it just has been with me all my life, very literally, and has meant so much to me. I remember my grandfather pulling out this particular VHS cassette when I was very, very young, and the moment that got me more than anything else, that meant that I was in, and it's a key moment into why I love James Bond, is that moment when Karina puts the moustache on Roger and he becomes Toro.
Sounds like a load of bull.
And it's the look Roger gives, that he knows he's going into absolute insane levels of danger, but he's doing it because that's the mission. The stoicism of James Bond right there, the willingness to risk it all, to go to whatever level was needed to win. And I was in love, just totally in love from then. Never mind then, the opening sequence was just, I still think it's amongst the absolute best in the franchise. John Glenn, goodness gracious me, I don't have words to convey how much love and enjoyment I have for his work, but also how much love and respect I have for that man. What he's done, it's ridiculous. But anyway, Octopussy, everything about it, I totally love. Everyone says, oh, it's really silly, it's really silly. It's deadly serious. Everyone's going to die. There's a nuke that's going to set off World War III.
Let me go, damn it, there's a bomb in there!
Forget that James Bond is in a clown outfit at one point. Because, and even having said that, he does carry it off unbelievably well. I don't think anyone else could do this. Only Roger Moore could wear a clown outfit and defuse a nuclear bomb. Does that convince you? Unbelievable.
Quiet, everyone! Quiet!
All the sequences are absolutely outstanding. The music is it's like slipping into a silk, I don't know, hoodie, dry robe, a massive silk dry robe. It's just wonderful. Everything about Octopussy is wonderful. I don't mind the jokes, the cheese, the stuff that everyone says is dead cheesy, you know, like, don't care, love it. Love everything. You know, I can take or leave, actually, the Tarzan swing. Does it affect my enjoyment? Get off. Get out. Go away. Of course it doesn't. I think it's just all the relevant beats are in place. Everything I love about James Bond is in place. And I can't tell you how proud I am to share my birth year with Octopussy. I know that I've never thought about it in that way. But my word, what a movie, what a franchise, what a day to be alive. You can tell, I flipping love this movie. And yeah, just, I'm so glad that we can own it on things like Blu-ray now and just have it forever and force it upon however many children I happen to have. Oh, peace and love, Octopussy, honestly, just, it's top tier.
Somebody that did get my humour was certainly Roger. I mean, because I found I was literally, once I'd done the 5-10 minute job, you know, so the next day it would be a 10-minute job because continuity would come in with Polaroids from the previous day and check to see the turban looked the same and it kind of had the same kind of shape and whatever. But once I was done, I was pretty much there for the day and the idea that it might fall off, which it never did. And so what I did was I'd literally sort of sit around Kabir's trailer. Roger's trailer was directly opposite. He'd normally be outside sitting on the step with a cigar. And so I, you know, would make it my business to go over and talk to him. I was a little shy at first. I thought, you know, megastar guy. But I've never been shy at doing these things. And I thought to myself, I don't want to come across as a fanboy. So I'm not going to go and sort of say, oh, Mr. Moore, you know, I really love you for years and years and years. I used to watch you in The Saint. Yeah, we developed a great rapport. He'd always acknowledge me in the mornings. I would acknowledge him. We'd have a chat, whatever it was. And he just had this lovely self-deprecating sense of humour, just didn't take himself seriously, which wound the journalists up great, because at the time obviously Warners were bringing back Sean for Never Say Never Again, and they would always try to goad him. They were like, Roger, is it a case the public doesn't like your Bond, they're bringing Sean back? And he was like, very magnanimous, he said, look, Sean is superb, and I'd even said to him, Sean was my first Bond and still as Bond, but you know, you're good too, in a very different way. And he sort of said, yeah, well, I try to make my Bond different because we can't all be Sean Connery. And there's a lot of, you know, license there that Ian Fleming has given to this character. And I try to exploit different elements of that with my personality. And I remember when there were some journalists there from Scandinavia and Germany. And I remember one of them was saying this and goading him. And he said, well, actually, you know, well, there's things that Sean can do I can't. And there's certainly things that I can do that Sean can't. And they were like, go on then, so what is it you can do that Sean can't? And they were looking for a real tidbit of scandal here. And he said, well, they leaned in, and he said, watch this. And he did that eyebrow raise.
Yeah.
And
he
goes, Sean can't do that. And they literally just collapsed, and I was pissing myself. Quite kind of, you know, in apoplexy, thinking that's so funny. And they just cut him to the quick. But like I said, a real gentleman.
I did get an invite to Roger Moore's sort of, they held a thing at Pinewood Studios.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. In celebration of Roger Moore. And I was very honored to be invited because Roger had a sort of personal sort of guide that guided him through. And I've done a number of things for him before. And yeah, it was nice to see John Glenn. And he was always a really nice guy. And I have such I tell one story about Roger Moore. Later on in Octopussy, I was shot down some stairs with a turban on, you know, makeup.
Oh.
And my mother used to teach mentally and physically handicapped children, and because having four kids, it meant that she didn't have to be all the school hours. And she got a letter from one of a boy that she taught, and the mother had sent a letter saying, I believe your son, Andy, is working with Roger Moore. My son is just such a fan of the Bond films. Is there any chance of getting an autograph? A picture, maybe? And I never do this. I really don't. I'm not very good with stars. And I said to Roger, difficult, but he said, what's the problem? I said, well, I've got a letter here. He said, well, show me the letter. So I showed him the letter. He read the letter. We were breaking for lunch. It was the time when they were tying me up in a chair or whatever. Mm-hmm. He said to me, you remember those bullets I shot? In those days, they used to leave the casings, the bullet casings. Now you have to clear everything, anything to do with weapons. It's so over the top now. So I got some of these casings and I gave them to him. And he said, great, that's great. He said, can I take the letter so I get them in? I said, yeah, of course. So he came back with a lovely, the cardboard envelope with his picture, what he'd done is mounted the bullets with 007. He'd scratched inside these bullets. And on the little thing, he'd written, these are the bullets that I shot at your teacher's son. And he fell down the stairs. He said, you will get this to him, won't you? And I went on my motorbike. I went down to the all-night, down in Leicester Square, there's the all-night post office. And I got it, and I did whatever you had to do to make sure that letter got to his mother. And 2 days later, I was back on the set, and he came up to me and he said, did you send it? Did you get it? And I said, yeah. I've got a letter here. Can I read it? And I said, of course. Of course you can. And I promise you, tears came into his eyes, and I still got that bit. And he folded the letter back and he put it in the envelope and said to me, do you know, Andy, that's worth a week's salary to me. And I just, every time I tell him, and I think, wow, what a guy. Mm. Fortunately, I've experienced other Bonds. Roger Moore was maybe not in everybody's he talked to everybody on the set. He knew tea ladies' names. He talked to everybody, flirt with anybody. He was great. I really such respect for that,
Probably my favorite Bond film is Octopussy. It's only because I love animals and I love working with animals. And there was some very funny incidents in it. Roger Moore couldn't believe it because, these actors, they don't really read the script until the night before they're going to shoot it. They sort of gloss over it.
The sit joke. Oh, yes!
I think I'll remember.
It's such a British thing as well.
I've managed to sort of reconcile that with myself, that he's up against a lion and he's doing anything he can to not be eaten. So I'll try this. And luckily it works.
Barbara Woodhouse, God love her.
Yeah.
From a dog training perspective, she was big business on a Sunday night on BBC One, but no, it wasn't sold to different continents.
That's how it is. Again, it's a bit underrated that in John Glenn, three of John Glenn's five, he comes out into the field to help him more.
Yeah.
If you think about For Your Eyes Only, he helps him in that.
And he can,
Locke, and then obviously he's forgive me, Father, for what I have sinned. So he does get more to do, and he's got great chemistry, Desmond Llewellyn with Roger Moore. It really, it really works well. VJ and Sadra Dean, they're two people you can think, they work in India, they work for MI6 in India. That makes sense, and they help Bond out as soon as he gets there. They're not the biggest roles, and even VJ isn't in it that much, but he does make an impact and an emotional impact. And again, great chemistry with Roger Moore, and it just makes this film just so amazing.
VJ was, a world class tennis player, also had the most wonderful personality, and was a great friend of ours. And he used to teach the Broccoli family in Hollywood. He used to come and teach them some tennis. Tried to teach them play tennis. if you saw Cubby, you'd realize he wasn't much of a tennis player. But he was a friend of the family and such a lovely man. And, you know, I met him there and we got on great. And we didn't give him anything that was that required too much of a strenuous acting performance. But he was just himself. He just played himself and he was great. And I always remember with the snake scene, he was a snake charmer in Octopussy. And we brought him down to Pinewood and we got Jimmy Chipperfield to come down with all his snakes. And we were draping these snakes round VJ Armitage on the set. He was terrified. He hated snakes. So he took all around his neck and he had to get used to it. And but it just shows you the magic of filmmaking. You know, within a few minutes, he coped with it. He started talking to the snakes.
I was 11, you know, I didn't know who VJ Amritraj was.
No.
I wasn't familiar with him as a tennis player. So the idea that Bond would go to India and then would be, you know, would have a connection with an Indian agent there. Well, that makes a lot of sense.
Some may see it as retrograde now if they've only cast him because he's famous.
Mm.
But how many Asian faces were you seeing then in the 80s?
Back then, exactly.
It's great. And I know, okay, he'd already made it. But just being in India, you know, the setting, that's another thing.
Mm.
You genuinely know that you're there.
One thing that my mother, God love her, but I always remember when she said, and of course the souffles turned up.
Yeah.
And they start the souffle, and then of course it's taken away, and she said they've only had one spoonful.
Yeah.
It's such a short meal.
Mortified.
I wish that scene was longer. I wish there was a bit more. I don't know. Again, it's pacing, isn't it, and everything. But
exactly,
it does feel lovely and quiet and ridiculous set for such a small scene. It's incredible.
Isn't it? One of our specialities. Stuffed sheep's head.
It's odd. But when I'm stared at, I seem to lose my appetite.
And in this, you get him in the black tux and the white tux.
Yeah.
Got everything.
The whole range.
It's funny because you're talking about the meal and that is what's on the screen.
Commentary
on the DVD.
I've got hungry all of a sudden. I wonder that's probably
yeah.
What...
Yeah. If you want to mention Jim Fanny, anyone, he's another ally, isn't he?
Yes, the Lowbridge Ellis love child.
Yes. Quite
right. Yeah. The reason, you know, and it's again, and you have to take your hat off to David in that respect. Jim Fanny was just another character, you know, helping him out along the way, etc. You hadn't really, I don't think we'd had another character like that. I'm just trying to think.
No.
In an M office scene, you'd never had an additional character. You know, the armourer was called in Dr.
This
No.
This resident art expert.
It's so funny that. And of course, the interplay between the two of them is lovely. Particularly when he realizes that he's actually bidding for the egg. Does that double take?
That
shot, isn't it? That zooms out and it's class.
But then after that, we don't see him again. We don't need to hear from him.
No, that's it.
He served his purpose. Yeah,
he's probably he probably resigns from the service after that from sheer shock. The pass that Roger does with the egg. I think it's just a touch quick, but nevertheless, takes it.
Jim.
Jim's already going, oh my God, no. And he picks it up and Jim? No. And then he just passes it and brings it back up again. Like there's no pause to drop one and pick the other one up or anything of that nature, but it's all in one motion, drops it back. It's a lovely moment. A good scene, that, I must admit.
Yeah.
And again, you hadn't heard anything until many, many years later, and all of a sudden, there's Jim Fanning Day. Where did that come from? Of all the characters, people are typing Jim Fanning. Oh, him!
I'm so gutted that he isn't alive, you know, because he would have, I'm sure he would have really appreciated
it. I reckon he'd have loved it. Yeah, absolutely.
I don't think any of the actors who played Bond could have done the scene with the egg quite as well as Roger.
No, not so.
The slight expressions of the face, the subtlety of the performance, and the movement that he just brings it all together, and his obviously cheeky humour. You can just see the twinkle in his eye. It's absolutely delightful.
Oh, there is. The Fabergé egg. While we're on it, has anyone ever tried to understand it? Does anyone care?
It's the MacGuffin, isn't it?
Yes. Mm. Yeah.
The thing that's thrown into the movie just to confuse you, mess you up, but it has to be there because we filmed this scene.
Yeah.
And we need this and that's got to happen and then, et cetera. So it's all a bit elaborate.
I suppose it's linked because of the jewellery, isn't it? Selling priceless jewellery to fund
the war. Aren't they stealing... someone's stealing... jewelry out of Russia, isn't he? Out of the Kremlin or something.
Yeah, taking the real stuff and then replacing it with the fake stuff later on down the line.
But it's, you know, in the end, that it whatever it is, it leads to Orlov getting
it goes on to
nuclear bomb, or you know, so.
Oh, Gogol's in it. He's another ally. So he is an ally, really, by now, because he's the reasonable person in Russia, isn't he?
Mm.
You know, right from the start, he's the one who completely sets Orlov straight.
Yeah.
And then he's almost in the background, a bit like the Holy Grail. He's sort of trying to catch up with Orlov by the end in a long coat, isn't he?
Yeah. I don't know if it's the first scene we see Gogol in, but he's in a phenomenal set.
It is.
Wonderful huge. Set, yeah.
And it was one that I was reminded of because obviously I saw the scene half an hour ago.
Yeah.
And that set, it's just one of those sets that is phenomenal, and yet you don't really think about it because it's there for a bit and it's gone. But when you actually stop,
Bond's not even in it.
It's incredible. It's huge, and it just has that kind of real style about it. It's fabulous. The set, the design, the look.
Yes, brilliant. Yes.
General Gogol is presumptuous. He speaks for himself and others who cling to timid, outdated and unrealistic policies. Must I remind you, the committee, of our overwhelming superiority over NATO forces before we give it away?
We were talking about CG earlier, and of course all those video graphics that are on there have to be programmed for real. You know, so nowadays that whole graphic sequence, everything in that scene would have been, you know, you'd expect to see X, Y, and Z. Then, presumably, you got to type in some sort of instruction to create a red sea appearing here.
Oh.
And that's
going
to go that way. And then a line of tanks has got to appear down here.
Yeah.
Really complicated, but it just beautifully flows from one to the other. It's lovely.
So effective, isn't it? For kids, like, look, that's red. They're the baddies. That's invading Europe. That's terrifying.
Yeah.
It's the start. It's a sort of elaborate version of the start of Dad's Army, isn't it?
Yeah.
Who do you think you're kidding, Mr. Orlov?
Obviously, Burkov is a bit too silly for Dad's Army, isn't it? He's a bit over the top.
Don't tell him your name, Burkov.
The score is never, ever mentioned as one of the best Barry scores. I've never heard it mentioned.
Gorgeous.
But I think it's generally well received, but the song is generally regarded as one of the very worst. The
song is forgettable, and I wonder if that plays into this film being
forgotten. Yeah, yeah, I was just about to say the same thing to Steve.
All the Roger Moore films, except maybe Moonraker, but they've got... Yeah. You know what I mean? They've got songs you will hear on radio stations.
Yes,
And general public, not we know it all, but general public, will probably know most of those songs. If you played it to, you played A View to a Kill to them, or you played Nobody Does It Better, Man with a Golden Gun, they'd go, oh yeah, I've heard that, I know that. But if you played them the theme of Octopussy, there's no hope that they're...
Yeah.
No, it's not called
Right, and they wouldn't know who sung it. She's not fit. So those two things, you know, just make it forgettable.
That was a major factor for Tim Rice almost turning the whole thing down. He said, I'm not writing a song that's called Octopus.
Yeah.
Yeah.
From a writer's perspective, it's bloody complicated to scan anything with it for a start off, particularly if you're looking at some sort of lyric shaping and getting to a point.
Yeah.
So, it's more difficult than Thunderball, isn't it, even?
Yeah, so he's had to come up with a new, you know, a new idea.
Yeah.
And, all right, All Time High makes a great deal of sense. You look at it now, Bond's All Time High, perfect. You know, it looks lovely.
Yeah.
The song itself needed a bit more. And again... You know, you've got that type of song given to a really very good vocalist, Rita Coolidge, who doesn't do an awful lot with it. To be honest with it.
Yeah.
you could give the song to I don't know, a Shirley Bassey type character and go, sing the hell out of that, would you, Shirley? And
yeah.
Five different versions of it, you know, whereas Rita Coolidge is going to sing it like Rita Coolidge. You know, you listen to, if you ever explore Rita Coolidge's back catalogue, that was the word I was looking for, yeah. ever explore, you'll note that there's not a great deal of in her vocal of any kind, and so that is a very interesting choice, and I suspect that it's got to do with the label. Similarly with the License to Kill thing, the label was very specific in connection with the artist and those artists. That was the first time we had a you know, various artist soundtrack.
Yeah,
there were other it tracks works, connect exactly, and I think this was MCA as well, or A&M Records, I think it was. Yeah. And Rita Coolidge was signed to those. So maybe it was very specific that she needs to be responsible for this.
Yeah.
Musically, it's gorgeous. John Barry does a lovely score. The music that's happening while Bond is doing that sneaky Bond thing all around, with the listening to what's going on in the conversation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And
breaking
out the thing. Just magnificently. Gorgeous snare drum rolls, and it's really lovely with pulsating, you know, stabs of strings. Just fantastic. And, and it's nobody ever says, you know, that's what a soundtrack, you know. Living Daylights is up there and scores of that nature, but I reckon that's really very, very good indeed.
Chris, is All Time High, does it have any chance of becoming like A Man with the Golden Gun in your eyes? I don't know. You know, one that people don't seem to like, but you've got a candle to it. You hold a candle.
It has grown on me, I think, because I do like an underdog, and this certainly is. it's like you say, it's a nice song. that's probably the nicest thing I can say about it. It's quite nice. You know, it's not very memorable. And it doesn't really do anything, and that's the problem. I also think that's the problem, because no one really talks about John Barry's score as much, because Barry's strength is interweaving the theme song into the score, and he hasn't got anything to work with, so it's all just him really doing what he does best in terms of, like, say, the creating drama and tension and excitement. But you don't get, like, you know, something like, you know, A View to a Kill or really, you know, Living Daylights, where he's pulling all these motifs and putting it all together, and that's what makes it so memorable. All Time High, it's I don't think it's a terrible song. I think it's just a nice song, and it's a shame, because maybe it is part of that. Like you're saying, that part of the marketing, the song didn't hit, and therefore it just somehow made the film kind of not forgettable, but didn't quite capture everyone's imagination. Because, like I say, when you hear Nobody Does It Better, you think, oh, you can see Roger Moore skiing off a mountain. You know, it's so indelible.
And yet, years later, it was you know, sung by Mark Wahlberg in.
Yes, he was. Yeah. In Ted, All Time High was, he was booed off stage, wasn't he?
Booed off stage.
And pelted.
And rightly so.
Yeah. Nothing against the song.
No. Just like Walter.
His performance.
It hasn't had that extension, a second life. You know, it hasn't had that. Oh, no. Do you remember?
I'd be surprised. Hill. I'd be surprised if it did, because it is so sort of just middle of the road and, you know, it's not offensive.
Adult contemporary.
And you know, when John Barry does use it in the score, it does sound good and you know, and nice and everything. But again, it's not quite as memorable, and you know, they're not like one and this. You know, I don't know.
There's no hook. There's nothing that it's not. It just doesn't grab you. You know.
Yeah.
It's just nice.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think it's perfect for the Magda scene and the Octopus Love. It's a beautiful theme. The way Barry sort of scores and orchestrates it is beautiful.
You can hear loads of our other episodes on iTunes, Spotify, and our YouTube channel, where we have interviews, special episodes, and reviews of all the Bond films,
including Octopussy, in nauseating detail.
Simply search Really 007 Pod, and you should find loads of weird and wonderful content.
The legacy of Octopussy 40 years on.
I do think its reputation is better than it was. I think people go back, we will be going, and we currently are in a bit of a drought when it comes to Bond films, that people are going to go back and revisit them all. And I do think that as people are doing that, that they're going to go and come across something like Octopussy, where, like say, it doesn't grab the headlines as much as the others, because it doesn't have those, you know, like Steve was saying, you go through, you know, all of Roger's films, there's something that really stands out about them. Just Octopussy is just a very, very good film and incredibly well put together. It doesn't have that, you know. It's a strange one. Why I just don't know why it hasn't landed. And I'm going to put that firmly at Ritaculogy's
door. Thanks, Rita.
Yeah. I think his reputation has. I've seen, you know, speaking to people and obviously looking on social media, the way that people talk about Octopussy, how it gains, you know, the people revisiting it, just seeing it for what it is, which is a great, you know, a great thriller with amazing stunts, you know, a fantastic cast, a great score. You know, it has so much going for it. And it's nice to see people kind of giving it some time, because, like I say, some people just sort of, oh, well, I'll just put, you know, The Spy Who Loved Me on again. And for people to actually go back and in the same way, I'd say that both that and For Your Eyes Only are the two that I've seen kind of grow the love for those two films recently. Yeah. And to a certain extent, you know, like License to Kill, those have really seen a resurgence in terms of people reevaluating it and going, actually, there's a lot here to enjoy. And people who are fans of, you know, Daniel Craig's films, going back and seeing kind of maybe elements that have been lifted for that are in those films, you know, that kind of more hard edge, you know, kind of scenes and moments with Bond. I just think it's a great film. I can't recommend it enough, and I'm so glad that we get an opportunity to talk about it. And, you know, 40 years on, and, you know, all hail, you know, John Glenn.
Yes, 40 years, and in 40 years, the leaps and bounds that they've made in technology and all sorts. And these two movies, I understand what you're saying there, Steve, but these two movies for me really still stand up.
Yeah.
You know, Octopussy particularly stands up. And the transition from, you know, the original version, the VHS version, the DVD version to Blu-ray that people now watch it on now, the quality is just spectacular. Yeah. It is like a new movie when you watch it for the first time on Blu-ray. When we saw it for the first time in 4K, you go, oh, this is the same film. This is unbelievable. Clarity looks magnificent, sounds terrific. And Octopussy is a really great example of Roger doing a terrific job, really well directed, not badly written. It's a bit complicated in places, but, you know, the action's on top note, and all these sensational locations all over the world, India, you know, places that we hadn't maybe not seen in such detail before. It's very rarely, I mean, I don't have, you may know, I don't have a TV, because if I sat in front of a TV, I would watch TV a lot. So I don't have one. So I'm very selective about what I watch. But if there is a Bond on, then I'll go and find the channel on the laptop, and I'll watch an Octopussy, certainly, if it's on. So it's always one of those that go, yep, I know exactly what I'm going to get here. And you'll just sit back, relax, and let it take you for that ride. And it works for me.
That's the irony, because I think, for some reason, Octopussy is forgotten quite a lot by the general public, but it's also perhaps the most bank holiday Bond film there is.
Absolutely, yeah.
And it's one that if it was on, you know, that you could, Moonraker, Goldfinger, these are the ones where, right, let's get the whole family sat down. They're all going to enjoy it. We're going to have a laugh. We're going to be really entertained. There is real escapism in Octopussy. But it did well. It's just we need to keep batting for Octopussy. to people who aren't Bond fans particularly.
I've just seen Where I'm Up To, VJ's just been killed. And that reminds me that you forget how dark this film is in places.
Yeah.
Because it's got so much humour, you forget, actually, this is really quite dark. And it also reminded me of what John Glenn said about, like, he likes to write a character in, or have a character written in, who will be a friend of Bond's and then gets killed. You get shot. We get VJ here. And then he's one of all of his
Well, which goes back to the point we were making earlier, which is why, there we are, you've just answered that point. So the reason that Magda carries on so long is we don't need her to be the sacrificial lamb here.
No.
because Vijay is the sacrificial lamb later on. So yeah, so she can run in parallel with Octopussy later on.
Yeah, the, and that's for 009. We always have to mention
that's
that.
That's for 009, yeah.
And this for my brother.
And that's for 009.
That is Roger doing what people, the, again, the casual observer, don't really remember those sort of scenes. And it's A Few Eyes Only and Octopussy, like we say, seem to be forgotten a bit by the general public.
He's human. You know, the character, he's a human character. Roger plays him as a human.
Roger was a lovely man. He was so funny. The times that he would take time out to make a gag. I remember one time we were doing on Octopussy and he was climbing from the balcony in the Indian Palace and he was going into Octopus's room, but he had to climb over. It was about 12 feet off the ground and he had to step over this. And there was a gap between the two balconies. And I said to John Glenn, wouldn't it be great as he's stepping over, we could have some pigeons go up in front of the camera. It's a low angle camera. And we could have some pigeons go up, it'd frighten the audience and it'd, you know, frighten the Roger. So he said, yeah, okay, you're the pigeon wrangler. I said, oh, thanks. So I said that in the morning, I said to the prop department, can you get me half a dozen or a dozen pigeons? And they said, yeah, like it was going out for a bottle of milk. Where'd you get the dozen pigeons? So anyway, in the afternoon, we all set it all up. I'm standing on a box under the camera, looking up, because the balcony was up there. So I said, pigeon, I put one pigeon under one arm, pigeon under the other arm, one this side, one that side. So I'm standing on the box, ready to go. Roger starts to walk across, turn over, action, and Roger says, hold it, I can't, I've got to go to the loo. So he gets down, goes all the way over to wherever he's going, came back, it was about 5-8 minutes. So, okay, so I put the pigeons back. Now I've got to get them out. Pigeon. Standing on the box, ready to go. The camera's just above my head. And action, and he starts to crawl across. And as he steps across, I let the pigeons go. Woof, up they go. All the feathers come flying down. And an egg hit me on the head, swim down my face. Roger was in hysterics, as the crew was. He'd gone all the way over to the canteen to get a fresh egg so he could drop it on my head. That was Roger. He would, any gag he could do.
Just to say, it's absolutely fabulous. Can't believe it's 40 years old. As Chris said, there is a timeless feel to it. I think I find John Glenn's films in general seem to be a bit more timeless, partly because of the stunts, I think, and the look of the film, and the John Barry element adds a timeless element to it. I think Roger's never better than he is in this film. He's got the best matchup in terms of a female lead. There's some cracking stunts, slightly confusing story, but some real moments of high tension. The disarming of the bomb, we haven't really talked about that, but it's a cracking moment in the whole series. So much tension, juxtaposed with it being in a circus with Bond dressed as a clown. But you know how serious it is. And, you know, normally, it's ever so slightly different. Normally, when Bond is defusing a bomb, he stops it and the countdown, you know, stops. This, the thing does go off, but he's removed it from the rest of the... So it's a stunning moment.
It was when we did the circus scene. Roger said to me, you can't be serious, John, that I'm going to be playing a clown, can you? James Bond playing a clown? I said, Roger, it's the most perfect disguise, you know.
Yeah.
He goes into this caravan and he comes out with the right face on, you know. And then he goes, of course, then you have to get him to meet the person he's impersonating, don't you? You have to come back. There's another laugh. No?
General, there's a bomb in that cannon.
Sure, where else would a bomb be?
Great clown, Ben. I'm deadly serious. I'm a British agent.
What?
For God's sake, tell him who I am. Kamal and Orloff double-crossed you. I saw them take the jewelry off the train. Does that convince you? Sir, that bomb is set to explode at 3:45. That's 90 seconds from now.
General, this man's either drunk or crazy.
Him being a clown, you would read on in some reviews, oh, it's a bit silly where he's a clown. No, it's not silly at all. I mean, that happens for a very good reason. The only thing I'd say is he gets his clown face on very quickly.
Oh, yeah, that's the main problem. Yeah.
But that's part of spy training, they probably do.
Yeah, they do.
Yeah.
But that scene, I think, to me, is brilliant. The tension in it, the excitement, the way you see the desperation on his face as he's trying to get the bomb and people don't believe who he is. And the gorilla bit is a bit silly on the train. Yes, okay, fine. It is what it is, but it's a throwaway, isn't it?
It's an absolutely brilliant film, and we watched it the other night, me and Chris. I just love it so much. I could put it on any day of the week and thoroughly enjoy it, and I just can't get enough of it.
This film has got so much going for it. It is so crisp, but to use a phrase that I've adopted.
Yeah. Thank you, Steve.
And it's a beautiful, I'm just watching now, obviously no sound on it, and it's just a spectacle. Every scene it goes to, whether it's the set, the location, the stunts, it is spectacle and just flows so beautifully from one scene to another. It is terrific Bond, and it is pushing it for one of my favourite Roger Moores. I always forget how much I love it until I'm on.
Yeah, that's
because
good.
Rita Coolidge sang the song, so I forget it exists.
Yeah.
Octopussy was one of those later on. It was an Easter bank holiday picture. You know, that was the big thing on the TV, and it was those occasion movies. There aren't those event movies that happen on television, because television changed dramatically. In the 90s. So the excitement of going, oh my God, that movie is going to be on the TV. I'm going to get a chance to watch it and record it, you know, and watch it again whenever I wanted to. They were massively important days for people of a certain age. And I think they're terrific. I love the Roger pictures enormously, but Octopus is a belter.
I would say children love this film. Grannies love it. Everybody I've ever watched it with has laughed along, been enthralled. And I hope we get to see it on a big screen again, because that was a real moment last year. That was a very, 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 felt very blessed and honoured to watch it with your heart and your mouth for those final scenes on the plane. It was just, I kept looking around at everyone like, can you see this, guys?
Yeah.
Just absolutely stunning.
I'm not sure we'll ever see that collection of films on the big screen again in that context. You know, that was a very special occasion, I thought, last year to do all of that. And when you did see it on the big screen in that quality, it did make a difference. Octopussy was certainly one of those that stood out enormously. Yeah.
Catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic-butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.